CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CGM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, Karen Bryant will be sharing her insights on the issues of poverty and disability.
So last time we talked about some of the challenges that come with your disability, I'd imagine there are some related to the ability to work and earn income. And
yes. The last few years, like, ever since a knee injury, I've been noticing that I am struggling to continue to do the work that I did before.
So, when it comes to a person with a disability, what are some of the poverty issues that you find that they commonly face?
Fixed income is a big one. But for most people with disabilities have to live on ODSP, and then only are able to work part-time, if at all. So that makes it difficult for them. I myself have had, I don't have ODSP, so it's just been my income from my job.
So, in that sense, do you find there is greater difficulty for a person with a disability in even finding a job, getting transportation to work, that sort of thing?
Yes, definitely. I myself have had to rely on the city buses or on taxis to get back and forth to work because I don't drive.
So, do you have any insights as to how the public and society can veer away from these self-fulfilling prophecies concerning disability and poverty?
I think they really need to take a good hard look at how people with disabilities are treated and how they are forced to live with low income or fixed income. Because I find that they are still looked down on as lower class or second class when they're trying to work and make a living as well.
So,
and pay bills.
That being said, do you consider yourself as an equal worker where you work? Do you find that you have the same potentials and skills as everyone else doing the job?
In most ways, yes. However, there was one time where the management learned that I was interested in a department manager position, and I was basically told that I would never get it because of my limitations.
It's unconscionable right there.
Yeah.
As a worker with a disability, what do you want the public to know about your abilities and about people with disabilities having potential to learn and grow in their chosen fields.
Yeah. I want them to see people with disabilities for their potential instead of just looking at their disability.
So, do you have any suggestions as to what could be added to support individuals in these circumstances?
More training and sensitivity and knowledge and understanding would be very good towards what you said, and so that people with disabilities feel more valued, and that society as a whole can see that people with disabilities are just as valuable workers and employees as anyone without a disability.
So in your own work experience, has there been any success moment where you were able to shatter those myths and say, my work counts just as much as anyone else's?
Actually, yes. There's been at least one experience that I had where a former employer or former manager of a company I worked for had come into my current employer's work, and he stopped me and asked me a question. And I looked at him because he said, are you full-time or part-time? Because he would only give me part-time hours. He couldn't see past the disability. And he didn't see my potential at all when I worked for him. Back then, he refused to let me move to another department because of my disability. Well, when I said to him that at that time I was working full-time, he was shocked. He couldn't believe it.
So, if you could send any message to society about the need for equal inclusion and better education when it comes to accessibility, what would you say?
I would say people really need to look at everyone's potential and not the disability.
So, do you find that things like the AODA Act or accessible training are widely enforced, that people are getting all the information they should have?
I would say that it probably needs more publicity.
I would absolutely agree with that.
Yeah. Most employers are trying, but not all of them.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah. Okay.
In this segment of our show, Abby DePasquale will be telling us a little bit about PMG awareness. So what can you tell me about PMG awareness?
So PMG Awareness Organization is a national organization, actually a worldwide organization. We are based in the United States. We are an all-volunteer organization focused on raising the awareness of a very rare brain disorder called polymicrogyria, or gyria, depending on where you're at and how you like to pronounce it. PMG is the abbreviation for polymicrogyria, and it basically means exactly what it says. When someone is born with polymicrogyria, as it develops in the womb, their brain, unlike a normal brain that is very full of squiggles and lines and folds called gyri, someone with PMG is born with many, or poly, small, micro, gyria folds. So their brain is full of those folds, but the connections between where those neurons normally go and where they develop is disrupted because of that structural development of the brain.
So when you say it's very rare, do you know offhand about how many people are affected by PMG?
That's a very great question, and the answer to that is simply no. And the reason being is that oftentimes someone with PMG will show a lot of other symptoms or signs as well, so it might be diagnosed as developmental delays or cerebral palsy or epilepsy, and it comes with a lot of other co-occurring conditions. And unless there is a brain MRI done and read by a radiologist who is specialized in reading and looking for the traits of PMG, oftentimes it will go completely undiagnosed or misdiagnosed for many, many years until there is something, maybe a major medical development that triggers a brain MRI, and then it will be identified. But it is classified as a rare disease because it affects, you know, a small population, is all we can say.
So, I'm curious, with the risk of misdiagnosis you alluded to, isn't there kind of a danger in just treating, say, the epilepsy aspect and not necessarily the underlying cause?
That's a great question. And PMG itself, once it is formed, the brain is formed, it doesn't change. So depending on where the location and severity of the PMG is in the brain, it determines what symptoms and diseases then may accompany it. So treating epilepsy may treat the epilepsy. What we have found, though, with someone who has PMG, it might be more resistant to medications. That drug-brain barrier is more convoluted and harder to get through. And so it is really important to get an accurate diagnosis early on, particularly because we know that the brain is very plastic, meaning it will continually develop as someone ages. And so if we can get early intervention in that peak brain development time, then we know that their risk for future difficulties, especially with fine motor and gross motor and speech, are much more controlled and lessened. So it really is important that we get a diagnosis of PMG. It's not necessarily harmful to treat the other co-occurring conditions, but sometimes they are harder to treat, for sure.
So what are some of the supports the organization provides to the patient community?
That is a great question. We are a very, very small organization. There are 4 board members who pretty much run what is happening, and we are spread across the United States. So we have some great volunteers that help us get the word out and help us promote and do social media posts. One of the things that we are most proud of is our family conventions that we do every 2 years. This year, 2024, one is coming up in Columbus, Ohio, and that brings together all of the families who are affected by PMG if they can make the trip. It is a life-changing event, and it brings together families from all over the United States, the world, really. People come down from Canada, and some from England and Scotland have come. So it brings together people just to recognize that you're not alone. I myself am a PMG mom, and I have a 16-year-old daughter, and I have only met one other person with PMG in her entire life. So, and that was just recently, since joining PMG Awareness. So we do that family convention. We also do a lot on social media through Facebook. We have a website that promotes connecting with other families, provides research updates. We do a virtual walk every year where we raise awareness by just promoting a theme and allowing our families to kind of get out and help us promote that theme to their own communities, as well as raise money and awareness for the organization to then continue with the research and the conventions that we hold for family members.
So in your time with the organization, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Well, every moment is successful. I will say, we do these coffee chats. They're now called PMG Connections, and it's a Zoom meeting that we do every other month with families wherever they're at. Sometimes it's on a Thursday and sometimes it's on a Saturday, and families can just call into these Zoom meetings and really just see other family members in their same situation and see kids like their kids and hear struggles like their struggles. And I will tell you, as a mom and as a board member, the highlight of those connections, that those Zoom meetings, is to see newly diagnosed parents on the call who now have a resource to ask, what should I expect with this, or what did you do about this? When my daughter was diagnosed, there was nothing like that, and so we just kind of fumbled our way through and guessed a lot of times, but now that we have that connection to other people and the ability to connect on virtual platforms like Zoom and social media, the ability for a parent to reach out and say, I'm struggling with this diagnosis, and then to see that progression of accepting of the diagnosis and then thriving even despite the diagnosis. So that's been my, I would say, my highlight of being involved in the organization.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Tune in to Indie Electric every Friday from 10:30 a.m. until noon, where you can hear a selection of the latest and greatest in independent rock and electronic music. Indie Electric, only here on 99.1 CJAM FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor and Detroit.
Welcome back to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard about some of the issues of poverty and disability from Karen Bryant, and Abby DePasquale told us a little bit about PMG awareness. In this next segment of our show, Brooklyn Einwiller will be telling us a little bit about SARI. So, if you could introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about SARI.
Yeah, so my name's Brooklyn. I'm the Fund Development Coordinator at SARI, so I'm in charge of all the fundraising efforts since we are a nonprofit charitable organization. SARI was founded in 1978 by Sid and Jean Greenberg in Arba, Ontario. They actually created SARI in memory of their daughter, Sarah, who also went by SARI, who passed away at the age of 15 due to a heart complication. And she was diagnosed with Down syndrome. And then 2 years after she was passed away, SARI was created in her honor, since her parents realized that she had a strong connection with the horses on their farm, which is where SARI still currently stands. And to this day, we have grown from a backyard project to 13.2 acres, and we have over 20 horses in our herd.
So, how do you go about reaching out to those who might benefit from therapeutic riding?
Yeah, so we do our best to stay active on social media. We do our best to, you know, kind of reach out to areas because we serve those in the London and surrounding area. So we reach out by social media, our website. We try to have a really strong connections in our community, so that way we're able to reach those people that we think would benefit from our programs.
So what are some of the key benefits that a rider might enjoy?
So we offer a wide variety of programs. So we have therapeutic riding, which is conducted by our PATH certified instructors, and PATH International is the board that we kind of follow all of our governing policies to ensure safety and the best experience for our riders. So we have therapeutic riding for those individuals who have a range of special needs, so some of them might not be able to walk or deaf or blind. So we offer that, and then we also offer our grooming program. So our grooming program's in place for individuals who might not qualify for therapeutic riding. So if they're not either able to ride a horse or they just kind of want that connection to the horses and more of a social interaction. And then we have hippotherapy additionally, which is performed by our occupational therapist on our staff. And that is, she's able to do a bunch of different things that a normal path instructor wouldn't be able to do. So she has people like lay on the horse to kind of work different muscle groups. She's able to, do different things, again, who might not qualify for therapeutic riding. And then we also offer summer camps and different programs that are integrated for individuals with special needs and without special needs. So there's kind of that aspect as well. So we offer a wide range of things so that a lot of people can benefit from our programming and get to experience what we offer.
So I'd imagine for someone with something like autism, for example, being close to the horse would have sort of a calming, therapeutic effect.
Yeah, for sure. So it's actually, a lot of research has been done, and it says that horses, kind of when they interact with humans, it actually lowers humans' heart rates, so they can kind of meet the horse at that level, and horses will kind of respond to the emotions that individuals are feeling, which is great. Our horses are amazing, so yeah, it's really great.
So, in your time with Sari, what's been the greatest success you've experienced?
I think just seeing how much our participants benefit from our programming. We serve over 130 participants a week and over 300 participants annually. And seeing all their connections with our horses and how much they've benefited from our program, I think that's the most rewarding thing, is just seeing how much they love to come to Sari week after week and being able to interact with people who are all there for the same reason. You know, we're all there to offer our programs for those individuals who aren't able to find, honestly, much else that they can partake in. And that's definitely the most rewarding, you know, rewarding aspect of our job. And we also run off of 250 volunteers weekly, so there's a really strong community behind Sari.
So, what are some of the most common adaptations for riders with disabilities?
Yeah, so kind of what we offer, so we offer a bunch of different adaptations. So the best one I can give you an example of is we have what's called rainbow reins. So we use those as kind of a guide for people who might not be able to, you know, understand sort of what the task is. So they're different colors. So a lot of times we'll say, you know, hold the red. So they have that visual aspect to try and be able to use that as a way to understand how they can guide the horse and take on that independence, which is really what we strive for. And we also have just like different specialized tack, which is the equipment that we use, and it sort of helps to meet those riders' needs. And every participant who comes into our program has an assessment with our occupational therapist, so we're able to create really personalized goals and plans for those individuals. That way they're able to, you know, benefit and meet the goals that they would like. So we really try to personalize their experience for every individual.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for programs like this and to keep going forward in things like integration and allowing opportunities for those with disabilities, what would you say?
I would just push for it more, because like I said before, there's really not a lot. You know, the participants that we serve, we've talked to a lot of them personally, and there's just not much that people with disabilities are able to do in the everyday community. I know in our community specifically, Sari is really the only thing that's there for them that kind of, you know, meets the needs of so many different disabilities and such a wide spectrum of disabilities. So I would just say we really need to aim for more programs like that. And it's also really important. You know, again, we're a nonprofit and a charity. So not only is it so important to have those programs, but it's also really important that people support those programs from a financial level, because 70% of Ceres funding comes from, you know, donations and fundraising efforts. We have 4 events throughout the year. So it's really important to, if, you know, with what's available, to also financially and support those programs, because there are so much, like, there's not much that they're able to do. So I would just urge, you know, the community to take part if there is something in your community that you can support financially, or even, you know, find out what's in your area, because, and kind of, you know, speak about it, because there's such little access to those.
So where can people go about finding more information about Ceres?
So yeah, our website is www.ceres.ca. So we have everything on there, from our programs, what programs we offer, all of how we do all of our events and fundraising is on there. So we have a bunch of different programs, like the Adopt a Pony program, where someone can sponsor one of our horses to alleviate that cost from us. We have just a wide variety of fundraising programs, such as the monthly giving program, where somebody can monthly donate to us. So all that information is on our website. We also have Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, and yeah, you can follow those at Ceres Therapeutic Riding. We are really active on those, so if you want to see how you can help and learn more about our programs, you can go to there as well.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep.
Thanks. My friends, the issues Karen spoke of in terms of poverty and disability really are a vicious cycle. The fact of the matter is, a person with a disability may have added complications or expenses to deal with. And in order to get ahead in life, which we all want to do, you have to not only obtain the supports you need, you have to be aware of them. And honestly, some just aren't well advertised. And the fact is, person with a disability may not check every box on every list. The truth is, they need help and support just as much as anyone else. There has been an ongoing movement to provide better supports and better funding for persons with disabilities. Honestly, it's a great idea. However, as inflation rises, so too must the funding and the supports. It can't be just a matter of resting on our laurels and saying, we took care of it in one shot. It's not the way the economy works. And from the standpoint of any employer saying that a person will never rise to a certain level because of their condition, that's just unfathomable. You should allow a person a chance to prove themselves, to have the opportunity to extend their skills before labeling it impossible. The truth of the matter is, a lot of people like to put disability in this nice, quantifiable box, but it cannot and does not factor in a person's strength, and no one can say what someone can achieve if given the right tools, the right moments, and the right understanding. It's no one's place to say, you are not good enough because. Having a disability, I've always maintained, simply another way of thinking, another way of looking at the world. It's a set of tools. You learn to work with it, you can achieve great things. You can do more than people expect. But it's up to each one of us to break down those stereotypes. I implore anyone out there with a disability listening, don't take it as gospel. Don't let any one person's pronouncement of what your life should and will be the all-defining thing. Explore for yourself. Prove what you're capable of. Test your own limits, if you will. Try to find ways just to grow a little bit, even if it's just in a very personal sense. There's no singular definition of success, my friends. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.